Hey, this is Ed from the Unique Geek. What you're about to listen to is an audio version of a video we recorded back Tuesday, November the 26th, on a Google Hangout on Air. A few of us got together to discuss the Doctor Who 50th anniversary episode that aired last Saturday the 23rd, and mostly some Doctor Who fandom too. If you want to watch the video version, we do have that over on our website at theuniquegeek.com. You'll more than likely, of course, same posting as you'll find this audio. I hope you enjoy.
There's one set for stun. Three guys sitting in a dark room that smells like bad cucumbers.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Now featuring 11 listeners.
This is Unique Geek.
Engage. You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
This is the Unique Geek.
We are... There we go. Now we're live for the... Yep, that's it. So the Unique Geek podcast here, sort of, video podcast. I guess we're going to try and do some audio later on. But so we are here to discuss the 50th anniversary, and specifically the episode that aired last weekend of Doctor Who. But I guess most encompassing is discussing Doctor Who's in the past 50 years and our experiences and a little bit more detail also in the episode. But first, I'm going to do some introductions. First off, we got Carrie. Say hi, Carrie.
Good evening.
Next, we also have Shag. Shag, introduce yourself there and pimp yourself.
Irredeemable Shag for the Fire Water Podcast and firestormfan.com.
Awesome. And also, Siskoid. Introduce yourself there and pimp yourself.
I'm Siskoid, Siskoid's blog of geekery, siskoid.blogspot.com. It couldn't be easier.
Awesome. Very cool. So let's get right into it. First I'm going to start off with Shag, since you, my apologies, Siskoid, I don't know too much of your experience with Doctor Who, but I'm calling on Shag now as being the expert here.
You don't know Siskoid yet.
Well, that's what I'm hoping we can get some more information from him in this recording. But so first, let's go with your experience of Doctor Who, how you got started, who's your first Doctor, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, first Doctor slapped me when I was born and spanked me. Oh, never mind. Started watching Doctor Who 1983. First episode I ever saw was A Few Minutes of Genesis of the Daleks. I thought it was a Star Wars ripoff. I thought Tom Baker was Han Solo, and Harry was supposed to be Luke, and Sarah Jane was Leia, and the Daleks were stormtroopers, and Davros was Darth Vader. I thought, this is a really crappy thing some college kids put together. It wasn't until I saw Hand of Fear that it all really clicked for me. So from 1983 forward, been watching Doctor Who nonstop. I was there for the 20th anniversary, November 23rd, 1963, or 1983, watched The Five Doctors when it aired. It was pretty exciting. So neat to be here 30 years later. Probably my favorite Doctor for many, many, many years, it was Peter Davison. Now it is David Tennant. And Davison is still a close second. Big fan of the novels and the audio dramas. I've got, I did some estimates over the weekend. I've read over 200 original Doctor Who novels. I've listened to somewhere in the excess of probably 400 or 500 hours of Big Finish audio dramas. I've got a collection of action figures and 12-foot scarf and question mark umbrella. I've been to a convention or two. I was a playtester for the role-playing game. I'm a fan of the show. I like it.
Okay. Siskoid, how about you give us a little bit of your background there?
Well, Hand of Fear is also an important one for me. It was the first one I ever saw, and three years later, let's say, it was again the first one I ever saw. So it was the first two I ever saw was the Hand of Fear. So here in New Brunswick, in Canada, we got the PBS station from Maine. So I saw the omnibus-sized episodes or stories, and Fourth Doctor first, of course, and then they started showing Third Doctor a half hour a day on YTV, which is a youth channel here, and we got the whole family on it. My sister it was her favorite Doctor, and she never forgave him for becoming Tom Baker. So I watched a lot of Third, Fourth, Fifth, whatever, but it was kind of sporadic to get the episodes. Later in life, when DVDs came out, I started collecting and really getting into the past Doctors. You can sort of see them behind here. I've got the entire collection in the back. Wow. There are a few. Well, I mean, it goes all the way to the floor.
Holy cow.
And for the last 2 years, I've been writing a Doctor Who review every day on the blog. So I'm going through every episode one by one. So it's the second anniversary of doing that on Saturday. It's like I started on a November 23rd. So now I'm up to whatever, 730 some straight days watching Doctor Who. I started an unearthly child, and now I'm at tomorrow morning is Fear Her. So that's the one I just watched, but that's where I'm up to. And I've read a few books, not as many as Shag. I've listened to a lot of audios, not as many as Shag. I play I game master the role playing game, the current one, although I own all three. I've got a lot of the action figures, and I am also the sort of Doctor Who guru in my circles. I got a lot of people into it. Even today I was at a convenience store, and a lady asked me if I was a Doctor Who fan. I guess it's becoming a fashion now, and she had a question about the end of time, and I answered it. I mean, very strange.
Now, you write for the fan version of the role-playing game too, right?
Right. I'm writing some unofficial Doctor Who source books that are based on the novels and audios. Before that, I was doing a Doctor Who CCG, an unauthorized one, which I created over 2,000 cards. That was insane. Lasted 7 years. And I've been writing audio reviews for Enlightenment, the fanzine. And I even wrote an article for an upcoming book. So that's going to come out someday.
Very cool. Very cool. So is that it? Is there anything else you want to get?
I think that's enough. Isn't it enough?
Gary, how about you?
Compared to those guys, I am wholly inadequate. I stumbled across Doctor Who probably in the early 80s because I was a Monty Python addict, but the only outlet was our local PBS station. So rooting around on PBS, I discovered the Tom Baker Doctor Who. Loved the show. Watched it compulsively, but at some point drifted away and didn't start watching it again until a little over a year ago, and just went on a Hulu and Netflix bender of gorging on the shows again, being reacquainted, and between that and downloading episodes and feasting on as much as I could. But I don't have any of the extraneous exposure beyond that, none of the gaming, none of the novels or any of the other unofficial portals out there.
Wow. Okay. I think I stumbled upon it pretty much the same as you. Early 80s in Tallahassee, watching PBS. I actually was watching Monty Python already, thanks to my dad introducing me to Monty Python, believe it or not, and stumbled upon it. And I want to say, of the Tom Baker, I want to say my first episode I watched, I want to say it was Ark in Space, maybe.
Good one.
Yeah, it was actually, and I think that's what that pulled me in. And of course, during that period of time, everyone's favorite Tom Baker, and I think it's still to this day, I'm still a Tom Baker fan. Watched some of the Peter Davison. Haven't really seen any of the other ones except I did see one Patrick Troughton, and I can't remember the name of it.
Probably Two Moons Iverman or C2.
That was probably, yeah, Cybermen. That's what it was, Tomb of the Cybermen. And I haven't really seen any of the other ones, except for, of course, the Doctor Who movie and the recent episodes. I forgot. Also, I've read a few of the books and audio dramas, thanks to Shag, of the Paul McGann series. So that's pretty much my level of expertise. Not a whole lot knowledge there, but yeah, I've been a fan for quite a few for a very long time. So, we pretty much, I'm sure we have a wealth of knowledge here amongst all of us, and I'd say we dive right into the episode and talk about this episode.
Episode? That was a movie for me, buddy.
Well, you know, and that's one thing I wanted to talk to you and Carrie about. As far as I know, you're the only two people I know who have seen it on the big screen. Siskoid, did you get a chance to see it on the big screen?
No, it wasn't on the big screen here.
Okay. So, Shag, I'm going to start with you, with your experience of the big screen experience, and then you give me your impression of that episode.
Sucked.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm kidding. Saw it on the big screen with my 14-year-old, which was kind of cool, who hadn't seen it yet. So when we watched it on TV, he wasn't here that night. He was his dad. So when my stepson and we went to the theater, so that was his first experience. So that was really cool, seeing it through his eyes. I expected, it was a Monday night, you know, because we didn't get it on the 23rd here where I am. We got on a Monday the 25th. So I expected the theater to be like, a few people. Dude, we got there 30 minutes early and we couldn't find a seat.
Wow.
We had to sit in the third row. We're like looking up the whole time. You know, my neck is still.
What? AMC?
Yeah, AMC. You know, one of the big houses. It's like one of the 400 seats houses. They had it in two different screens, and both were just packed. And something really weird happened. I don't know if this happened to you too, Carrie. There's a company called Fathom, which I guess was the distribution in the United States.
Yes.
And the film was supposed to start at 7:30. Well, 7:30 comes and goes, and for 30 minutes we sit there watching this somewhat supposed to be interesting but actually kind of boring slideshow. Our film didn't actually start till 8. Mm-hmm. And the crowd's
delayed that long. It was delayed. It's delayed some, but we were getting the audio portion of a video feed about other Fathom events, but no video.
Oh, geez. Okay. See, we had like ours was mostly like a slideshow. It'd be like trivia questions. You know, in what episode did this happen?
Typical movie fare that you see before the credits roll or the trailers roll. And we didn't get trailers before this because it wasn't an actual movie.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. We didn't get trailers either. Huh. But the slides, like he said, it was average fare for a movie, but it was all Doctor Who themed. Mm. Anyway, so the movie finally starts at 8, a half hour after it's supposed to. It was incredible seeing it on the big screen, Ed. It really was. That is a movie. It's not just an episode. It really is. It's once I saw it on the screen, I sort of realized that Stephen Moffat and the crew and everyone put together something of such a high caliber. This was more than just a TV show. This was something special.
And well, I would expect it to be, since it's a 50th anniversary. Yeah. I mean, why not? You know.
Yeah, but I'd already seen it, so I mean, I guess I surprised myself by being so impressed with it. I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was really good on the big screen. There were some special clips. We got to see David Tennant and Matt Smith before the film kind of explain 3D glasses and all that. The 3D, I abhor 3D movies. I hate them. I think I understand why they exist and why films keeps doing them, but I don't care for them. I don't typically support them. I did this time. And the 3D was pretty good, actually. It was pretty fun. So all in all, it was a very good experience. I'm very glad I saw it in the theater. I actually have a movie ticket that says Doctor Who. I don't think I'll ever have that opportunity to have that again. And I had a good time. The crowd was fun. You know, at one point we're all holding our sonic screwdrivers up in the air and waving them around. And, you know, like when you go to a Star Wars film and everyone's got the little lightsabers going. So It was good. I'm glad I did it.
Well, before I get your impression on the actual episode itself, I want to go to Carrie and let him explain his experience with the theater.
We went through the Fathom events, was showing it here in Jacksonville as well. And I've been to other Fathom events, and I thoroughly enjoy it, mainly the Mystery Science Theater guys, the Rift Tracks.
Yeah.
Which I full-heartedly endorse. But typically those Fathom events are pretty sparsely attended. The you know, you may have a small cluster of hardcore fans that go to it, but it's not, the theater's not packed. This was packed. There was barely a seat to be had in the lower portion of the seats, to where you've got to crane your neck and look skyward just to see the theater. There were people packing that area too.
Wow.
I was astounded at the number of people that were there, and astounded at the ages too. The vast majority of the crowd were like middle school to early high school age.
Wow.
Wow.
There were some adults there too, and a few older people, but the bulk of the crowd were teenagers. And it was one of the best crowds I've ever been in a theater with too. Typically,
because you audience participation?
Not necessarily participation, just the experience of enjoying something in the theater environment. Normally, you've always got a talker, you've always got somebody that has to whip out their cell phone to check text messages or Twitter or whatever. They were the best behaved, the most enrapt viewers, the ones that just seemed to want to sit there and soak in the whole environment. And it was a better experience than any movie I've ever been to.
And I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I think it was because it was a special event, and the people that were there were hardcore fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, it felt like a movie. It did not feel like a TV show on the big screen. It felt like a movie. And the experience of seeing it in a theater really added something to it. And I've got it now. I recorded it, and I'll probably watch it later on television or on my iPad again. But I'm very glad that I did get to see it in that environment.
I completely agree about the crowd, their courtesy. Now, our age breakdown was different. Ours was more people our age, which unfortunately is old, and then a lot of college kids. I was really surprised at how many college kids were there, but I'm in a college town. So did you guys have a lot of costume cosplay type stuff? We had a whole bunch of fezes, tweed jackets, bow ties. I wore my 12-foot Doctor Who scarf.
I saw quite a few of those.
I have very few opportunities in my life to actually wear that in public, so I figured this would be one of the ones where I wouldn't get a funny look. So it was fun.
Yeah, a lot of the canvas Converse-style trainers, trench coats.
You mean sand shoes?
Yeah, the sand shoes. I didn't know what that was until just...
I've never heard that before either.
I had to Google it too, and it came up really fast on Google, so I think there were a lot of people that have been searching it.
Funny.
But yeah, it was surprising. There were quite a few people there that that dressed up at least marginally.
Hmm. So, back to you, Shag. Your actual impression of the episode. I think you mentioned on our Google groups that you were pleasantly surprised.
I was stunned. I sort of like prepared myself to be let down. Because I usually get my hopes up really high for, like, Christmas specials and whatever, and it's always kind of like, I kind of wanted something different, or it's not what I want. Or, like, when David Tennant regenerated, I it was good, but, you know, I would have done this differently. I was blown away the whole time. I could not believe how well-crafted the story was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a solid – I mean, sure, there's some plot holes here and there you could poke if you want, but it was well-structured. There was a good emotional hook. They picked a good, forgive me for saying human, but human angle for you to latch onto. There was also an epic scope to it. All the right finishes were there for the real fans. I was completely and far exceeded my expectations, probably the best way to put it. Far exceeded.
Okay. Good. Carrie?
Not only did it exceed my expectations, it went in a direction that I had not expected. Doctor Who, in the past season or so, has turned a bit dark. There are a lot of heartrending moments, a lot of extremely sad moments. There's a joke Maria and I have about Moffat making me feel the feels. And I expected at some point to have a real tearjerker moment, something just really heartrendingly sad that we've seen so many times in the past. In that show, and I was really surprised at how uplifting and happy the episode ended up being. It was much more lighthearted, even though ultimately it had some dark moments to it, but the ultimate story arc was not as tragic as that. It didn't really have a tragic aspect to it. It had on almost a happy ending. But it still stuck true to some of the story elements that I've appreciated so much about what Stephen Moffat has done. There were plenty of opportunities where the Doctor could have taken the easy way out. He could have just picked up a gun and started blasting. He could have resorted to violence, to force, to taking what you want. But in the end, it was the triumph of intellect over that easy way out, the triumph over seeking the high road, the triumph of not giving up on your ideals. If anything at all, even the Doctor overcame what he saw as the only logical choice. He found another choice beyond that that was even better, that was a true triumph of spirit and intellect over what seemed like impossible odds, and I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Siskoid, what was your impression on of the episode?
Well, it was awesome, but like Carrie said, it was a story of redemption. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Redemption for something that we knew had happened but didn't really know how it happened. So on a continuity level, which it was really interesting to see how Moffat blew up continuity, you know, retconned stuff and told us what we thought was true wasn't, but at the same time patched up everything that didn't really make sense. Because I'm watching them in sequence right now, back to back, you can sort of see, oh, well, here they're saying something about the Time War, and it's not quite true to what you see later. But somehow I don't know if he had a checklist, but he really did that well, where he, well, that didn't really make sense. That was a little plot hole there, and he fixed all of that while still giving us a coherent, emotional story. So that's pretty amazing work. But Moffat's really good at intricate storytelling. Sometimes when the stories go too wide, we get sort of lost. And I got to say, I've been disappointed with the last season. Not with the characters or anything, but some of the stories have been what I call kitchen sink, where it's everything and the kitchen sink thrown in, and they've sort of left me cold. But this and the this was great, and it was a celebration. There was just enough of old continuity, or you know, showing us old doctors. I mean, and how about that moment when Peter Capaldi just steals the show just with his eyes? I mean, what was that?
Yeah,
two
right.
You know? Seconds. I checked.
What the
two
heck?
2 seconds of screen time. And that's all I can think about.
2 seconds.
You know, the theater's still not around.
He's the new doctor. 2 seconds. Bang.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Right.
The internet.
That's all it took.
And the internet was lit on fire. I mean, I was just seeing stuff all over Google+ about that. I mean, it was just crazy. But yeah, that's a good point. I mean, just that little, and that's what I wanted to say too, is that, overall, as far as for me, my going into it, I didn't really have a whole lot of high expectations either. You know, I actually, as far as leading up to it, I was starting to get really, really into it just last week from everything that was going on the internet. You know, io9.com, you know, Lifehacker, a lot of these other, you know, geek sites that I go to, Google+, you know, people just posting things, the Nerdist posting things about the upcoming episode and stuff like that. And of course the minisodes, the webisodes, watching that, especially the one with Paul McGann, that just blew my mind when I first saw that.
Oh my gosh. It was so
and when I, after seeing just that episode alone, is actually when I started getting really pumped up. So actually just from that episode, I kind of started getting a little bit of high expectations. And overall, I absolutely loved it. I think, honestly, a good chunk of the episode, I think my jaw was pretty much like this, wide open for pretty much the, you know, I would say pretty much the entire episode. I mean, it's just like, you know, just here and there, all these little things going, you know, just great representations of showing, you know, past doctors, you know, these little tidbits here, you know, just in the first couple minutes, seeing the scarf on the young lady, the Tom Baker scarf. I mean, it is like, wow, that is just so freaking awesome. You know, and even hearing her ringtone on her phone, you know, with this TARDIS noise. I mean, that just that cracked me up. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. I really, really enjoyed it. Matter of fact, I watched it again just before this episode, before we started recording tonight, and just so I could pick up on some stuff. But you know, as far as Moffat is concerned, there has been quite a few episodes that just kind of left me with a big gigantic question mark on above my head. It's just and I guess, you know, especially I mean, my memory is horrible as far as remembering episodes, and a lot of his episodes have not been too outstanding to where it helps my memory to remember them later on. As far as, you know, there are no actual standout episodes, and this seems to be, this might be a little bit different. This might, even though, yes, it is the 50th anniversary, I can see myself still remembering this episode in the months and the years to come, because I think this was a very memorable episode. I mean, I loved it. I mean, I can't say enough how much I loved it. I even recorded the Graham Norton show that came on Saturday night and watched David Tennant and Matt Smith guest star. Did you guys get a chance to watch that?
That was damn funny. I really liked that.
There's a doctor on your screen.
There's a Peter Capaldi.
So that's what I wanted to ask. So that's something, and we've known about this announcement for what, since the beginning of the summer, I think it was when he announced it.
Something like that.
Yeah. So tell me, what are your thoughts on this guy? I mean, I know for myself, I love Matt Smith, not as much as David Tennant, but I like Matt Smith a lot. And especially looking back, you know, seeing the same actor, you know, popping up in previous episodes of Doctor Who and Torchwood, I kind of have a, I don't know, I'm a little jaded, I guess you could say, and I'm not really excited about seeing him portraying the new Doctor.
Thoughts? Wrong, sir.
Have you not seen The Thick of It? Have you never seen an episode of The Thick of It?
I have not.
You should. He's the Doctor in this. Well, the Doctor with a lot of profanity, but
yeah, YouTube him, and you hear the F-bomb how many times he can say it. It's great.
And the show makes some Doctor Who references, so I think there's actually a YouTube with it's like a fake Doctor Who trailer where it's a lot of lines from that show where he references the Daleks or with lots of profanity, but it shows a person that has a lot of a strange energy and a darkness to him, but a comedy to him, and able to improvise and be eccentric. So that performance in that show told me, yes, he could be the Doctor, and it's a lot better than The Fires of Pompeii or what he did in Torchwood. I mean, which were relatively simple characters, you know.
So yeah. you're actually kind of excited. I mean, is there any disappointment with Matt Smith leaving? I mean,
I think every doctor is in danger of overstaying his welcome. So Tennant was there too long for me. The year with only the specials, I was kind of sick of his tics, or him and Russell T Davies were, you know, somehow I was kind of sick of that take on it. Mm-hmm. I say sick, I mean, you know, bored with it or ready to move on. Mm. And the same was true of Tom Baker, for example, who stayed 7 years, which was at least 2 years too long. And it starts to show.
Because, 17.
Yeah, it starts to show. You know, somehow it gets a bit tired. It gets, or the actor becomes a bit indulgent, even his writers start to get indulgent with the character. So before Matt Smith gets tired, or his audience gets tired of him, it's time for a change, and we'll always have that canon of work that he did, and if he doesn't overstay his welcome, well, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I add on to that real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
See, for me, I sort of agree with what Siskoid said. For me, though, it's more the producer. Like, I think it's more was Russell T. Davies and Moffat. It just, they made the show, like, towards the end of David Tennant's run, the stories got so heavy. Mm-hmm. Every episode, if you watch David Tennant's first season, it's a freaking blast. he is having fun. He is running through the universe from one adventure to the next, having a great time. And then the big, long story arcs start to weigh down the seasons. And then it gets to be everything's dark and dreary and a lot of emoting at the camera and all that stuff. And it's like, I was ready for Tennant to go, but I didn't realize what I really was ready for Russell T. Davies to go. Now, with Moffat, I feel like Carrie said it a moment ago, like this season, there's a whole bunch of gut punches from as you said, Moffat, gut punches. But to me, it's kind of like it's getting too heavy again. Like this season with last season with River, it was just one big storyline that I kind of was like, I want more fun episodes, not one big arc. And then this season, the back half honestly hasn't grabbed much of my attention. I do like Moffat a lot, and I think there are some standout episodes. And Matt Smith's first season is fantastic. It's a blast. He's having so much fun. He's young. He's raw. So I'm like, I know Moffat's not leaving the show, but Capaldi's going to bring a new energy. It's going to give a refresh. So I'm looking forward to the change. I'm ready for Matt Smith to go, or at least I'm ready for Moffat to refresh, because I think he needs a change. And I think Capaldi's going to bring a total badass angle. He's not going to be the goofy David Tennant or the naive Matt Smith. He's going to be a bit of a hard ass. I mean, Moffat's even said so. He's going to have a lot more of an edge to him. And he's a brilliant actor. In fact, he's the only Doctor Who actor to ever walk into the role already with an Oscar. I mean, he's that good of an actor. And I mean, again, just the man's eyes alone, just his eyes steal the show, you know? Yeah. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to it. I think I'm ready for the change.
Yeah.
Carrie?
I'm looking forward to the change. Now, I've missed all the Doctors when time has come for them to be renewed and a new series or a new story arc to go through. But I guess that's just the American media fan that I am, because we tend to hold on to things too long, and that's one of the things I admire about British television. They're not afraid to cut something short. Everything has a program story arc where it's going to end. They don't. It doesn't tend to drag on too long. Like he mentioned earlier with Tom Baker. I love Tom Baker. He was my Doctor, and I still finally remember some of those things. They're probably better than they actually were. But
Guarantee
Season 17. Yeah. Each one of those former Doctors, whether it's Christopher Eccleston all the way through Tom to Matt Smith, they did their time in the role, they did what they could with the character, and they called it quits. And one thing that's a common theme amongst all of these guys, which I think the next character will have, is the Doctor has a certain amount of mania to him. He's manic in some way. Each different rendition of the Doctor was a different artistic take on what made that guy manic. The Christopher Eccleston one had a sense of desperation to him, just the expression that the character usually had, the eyes, the pleading look in his eyes, to the angrier Doctor that followed him. From the first episode where he was on the ship flying over London asking, what kind of Doctor am I? He got into a sword fight. A duel. When has the Doctor ever done that before? That's the kind of Doctor he was. To be followed by the silly Doctor, the Doctor that forgot. He chose to be more childish in response to a situation that he couldn't mentally handle. But he still had a certain amount of mania to him. And then the next Doctor apparently is going to be the crabby old man Doctor.
Woohoo! That's what we are.
I've really liked his persona and some of the other things I've seen him in. And I really look forward to his artistic take on what the Doctor could be.
So here's my question then, as far as Capaldi is, at least for some of us who've not seen any of his other work. I mean, I'm going to use my wife and nephew as an example. They, you know, as soon as I showed them Capaldi, they like kind of cringed for a moment. You know, they've not seen any of his other work. All they see is an old man compared to, of course, you know, the young David Tennant and Matt Smith that we've seen. Don't you think, just like that audience, the rest of the crowd who have been I hate using the word Whovian, but have been Doctor Who fans for the past 5, 6, 7 years of the new Doctors, do you think that they're going to have almost the exact same, you know, at first impression that, you know, we got an old guy coming in now. This is not going to be the same. I mean, what do you think of that?
It's better ask better assign people first.
Well, I mean,
Carrie, you go first.
Okay, it's a gamble. He's not as visually appealing to some of the younger crowd, perhaps, because he is an older doctor. It does kind of break in the string of the doctors being consecutively younger in each generation. But I think he could make it work. It comes down to how he portrays the character, to how the writing of the story is presented. Will he fall in love with one of his companions like the earlier doctors have? Probably not. But that's already been done. How many times can you see that before
it becomes
too tired of a storyline? So yeah, I'm ready for some new stories, and I would hope the majority of Doctor Who fans are as well. And I'm excited to see what a different age actor, a different temperament, a different skill set, because this is a storied actor, is going to bring to this.
Yeah, good point. Shag, it looks like you got something to say.
I agree with everything Carrie said. I think the people who have come to the show and enjoy the drama of it are going to stay around, and they're going to find out that Capaldi's friggin' brilliant. You know, the best example I heard was like Breaking Bad. I don't watch the show, but everyone loves it. And that actor, he's not a young guy, and yet everyone's entranced by him. I don't know if you watch the show. Maybe you feel that way. Whatever. But
Bryan Cranston is a compelling actor.
See, and I think Capaldi's going to be that way. I think when you start watching the drama, you're going to be sucked in. Now, all the teeny boppers that come because David Tennant and Matt Smith are dreamy, some of them are going to drop off. This is probably going to be the most detrimental thing to Tumblr that has happened in years. If you ever spend any time on Tumblr, it's just a bunch of...
Yes, he did.
A lot of Doctor Who stuff. Anyway, other than damaging Tumblr and losing some teeny bopper fans, I think the show will be fine, will persevere. BBC's made its reputation on strong drama, not hunky guys. That's the CW. So I think in the long run, yeah, it'll have a little bit of a bump. You'll have some fans who drop off, but for the most part, it's going to be fine.
Well, I can tell you, and I'll get to you, Siskoy, but I can tell you as far as that is concerned, I think this 50th episode, the 50th anniversary episode, helped in a little bit, especially for someone like me, seeing Capaldi just that brief moment. I think that was a great and fantastic tease for this new doctor coming up, and I think that's actually going to help quite a bit.
Using that example, were you were you enraptured by John Hurt?
Exactly.
Not so much. I'm a fan of John Hurt's, but I didn't. You know, he's a great actor. He is. He's a fantastic. He did a great job, but if he was, I can't see myself enjoying.
Okay.
Him being as a main doctor in a weekly episodic series, I don't know that I would enjoy that.
Fair enough. Well, he's 20 years older than this guy, Peter Capaldi, who's, by the way, the same age as William Hartnell was when he started the role. So, Siskoy, you're up.
Well, I was going to ask the same question or have the same comment, really. If people accepted William Hurt as or John Hurt as the doctor in that episode or film, let's call it, then I mean they're making the water warm enough for people to accept Capaldi, because here, if they always thought the doctor was a young man, here they saw the doctor was also an old man. And if not Hurt, then all the other doctors that showed up in the flying TARDISes or that sequence, that dream sequence where they're all there, if people didn't know what the doctor was all about or what he looked like in past incarnations, they saw it there. So it's not the set thing of a young doctor. So the films sort of set that up for people who didn't know anything about it, anything about the history of the show, and who thought maybe Eccleston was perhaps the oldest doctor ever, you know. and an older man can have a sexiness to him. I mean, you know, for the mom.
Patrick Stewart.
Look at all of us.
Oh, yeah, that's a good example.
That's not a good example. But Patrick Stewart is a great example. So he'll be a captain. He could be a Captain Picard type rather than a Kirk or a TOS Kirk.
Yeah. So And on the subject, you know, going back to John Hurt, that's one thing. You know, I got so many questions actually for this episode, and I know we won't have time tonight to go over them. But speaking of John Hurt, so I posted this question over in the Unique Geek forum, and I don't think it ever really got answered. At least I still don't understand it. So they're explaining, especially in that webisode, that John Hurt is the War Doctor.
Correct.
Not the Ninth Doctor. And I still have a hard time understanding that. If he is a doctor, why would he not be considered the Ninth Doctor?
After this, don't worry about it. He is the Ninth Doctor now. I'm pretty sure what they're going to do is clear all that up, and he'll be the Ninth Doctor. Eccleston will be the Tenth. There's some debate about whether Tennant is going to be the Tenth or the 11th and the 12th. There's this big thing right now supposedly out there about Moffat saying... I read an article on it today. I think it's a bunch of BS, but whatever. His Tenant had a regeneration halfway through that he shot into his spare hand. Anyway, and Matt Smith would be the 12th, making Capaldi the 13th. I think that's going to be done. And well, I know where you're going.
I was going to say, didn't they say in the episode 13 Doctors?
Yes.
Yeah.
So well, that was kind of confused me, too.
Something kind of was glossed over. This movie / extended show was in essence a giant retcon. They went in and changed the canon of the Doctor Who storyline and did it as part of the story, which I think is an admirable feat. They went in and changed the fact that the Doctor actually didn't destroy his home world. They've given him an entirely new direction, a new purpose to the storyline now.
Well, at least a retcon back to the Eighth Doctor, I guess it is. I mean, at least that far back.
So something that has been the focal point of, or at least a common theme of some of the several last seasons, is now gone. And it was so deftly done that it was part of the story. So I've never seen a retcon handled so skillfully before.
Yeah.
Well, except for Bill and Ted. Cisco, you got any comments on the numbering of the Doctors?
Well, I read a Moffat interview recently, or this week, where he says, he doesn't really clear up. He more or less avoids the whole 9th, 10th, 11th issue by saying, basically saying the Doctor himself doesn't consider himself the 9th Doctor or the 10th Doctor. He calls himself the Doctor. He's just the Doctor. 9th, 10th, 11th, that's what we call them to tell them apart. That's fan lists. Kind of thing. So by calling Hurt the War Doctor, he's giving us the out. We can call him the actual Ninth Doctor if we want, or we can call him the War Doctor. In my reviews, I'm going to go with Ninth Doctor, Tenth Doctor. I mean, Tenth Doctor is Tennant, Doc 10. I mean, it's so perfect. And the Eleventh Doctor has an episode called The Eleventh Hour, which doesn't make sense if he's the Twelfth Doctor, see? So we can still call him that. And the War Doctor is the one that's supposed to be the one who broke the promise, and he's not the Doctor. He's specifically not the Doctor, except in this episode, he becomes a Doctor again. He's redeemed before he has a chance to destroy Gallifrey, sort of thing. So his life is retconned so that he doesn't break the promise, although he'll never remember that he didn't break the promise, and so the pain of the 9th to 10th, 11th Doctor is still real until Matt Smith is actually relieved of this burden. So for Moffat, he says, well, basically the numbering is artificial anyways, so you call them what you want, but it does make Capaldi the 13th in any case, right? Yeah. He'll be the 13th life, so by the time he has to end his time in the role, they'll have to have figured out how to extend the regenerations for the show to continue.
Well, at no point in New Who since 2005 that I'm aware of have they said there's a limitation of 13 bodies. That was a classic series only.
That was going to be my next question about that.
I mean, you watched it more recently than me, but I've been listening for it for the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Where did it happen?
I'm not sure now, but I think it's... Well, I think it's like in Let's Kill Hitler or something. It's there.
Okay.
But that was the out. Let's Kill Hitler was the out because to heal him River gives him all her regenerations. She loses all her regenerative ability by giving him that energy. So from then on, I mean, it's...
Well, the article I read today was talking about how they're going to stick to the 13 regeneration issue and make it a storyline.
Right.
And they were trying to... And I figured the storyline would be, okay, Capaldi would be the 13th. He thinks it's his last life. You know, that would be the drama throughout his era. But what they're saying is... According to this storyline, Matt Smith is the 13th Doctor because David Tennant had that halfway regeneration through his run. So that makes Matt Smith the 13th, and Matt Smith thinks he's going to die and he can't regenerate, and somehow some storyline happens, and that's why he's able to regenerate and become Peter Capaldi. I think it's a bunch of crap. First, I think they just ignore the damn thing and move on.
Well, it's possible because the Christmas special will be the Trenzalore thing.
Yeah,
his tomb, and so if they want to explore that aspect of it with Matt Smith, he sort of has to face death. Silence will fall, and I guess so will the Doctor, kind of thing. But
yeah, maybe he just falls down and he can't get back and can't get up.
That's one thing I was gonna. Yeah, I'm glad we talked about the 14 Doctors, but you know, there's one thing that is kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys saw the. Pre-show before the episode last Saturday on BBC America, but they actually did an interview with Moffat, and they were talking about, you know, the show's been around for 50 years, and hopefully it'll be around 50 more years or something like that. And even Moffat alluded, I don't know if it was just something he was just pulling a number out of the air, but he even mentioned something about being the 28th Doctor.
He talked about the 100th anniversary. Yeah, I saw that interview. Yeah.
So I don't know if, again, I don't know if he's just pulling that number out of the air, if there's something, I mean, if there is a thought in his writing that, you know, forget what's been told in the past, you know, in the past of Doctor Who, that there will be no more 14 lives or whatever it is, that it just go on and on.
Well, I think we've always known that. I mean, even as we were kids, I remember watching in 83 and hearing, okay, there's a limitation. I think we all knew that the story would dictate when it got there that the Doctor just keeps going. I mean, it's fiction. They'll just find a way. I'm sorry. I think I stepped on you talking there, Carrie.
I was just going to say, in the post-showing, because at our showing, they had the making of that followed immediately after it. And in that, what they were discussing was the 50th anniversary and how excited everyone was. And they alluded to, or didn't even allude to, they just flat out said, we're looking forward to the next 50 years of this show.
Right.
So either they're going to have some doctors that hang around a long time writing some way around the limitations of regenerations.
Right, yeah. I think it was the same thing when he was talking about there being, you know, the 28th Doctor in so many years from now, whatever.
Can I bring up a topic?
Yeah, absolutely.
This goes to pretty much the whole back half of the seventh season, and just curious on people's feelings. I'm going to talk specifically about Jenna Coleman. I, at first, regardless of the fact that she's drop dead gorgeous, I mean, she is so hot, it should be illegal. But regardless of that, I didn't take to her on the show. Like, whenever I looked at her, I saw an actress trying to play a character, probably to build a resume. I didn't see Clara. It wasn't until the Trenzalore episode, and it wasn't even until like the second or third viewing of the Trenzalore episode, that it finally clicked and I saw Clara. And during the movie, I saw Clara the whole time. But up until then, I never really engaged on Jenna Coleman. Anyone else's feelings on that?
So, and this goes back to what I was saying as far as some of the Moffat episodes not being too memorable to me. I mean, as far as the, you know, I mean, of course we all did. As soon as she came on board, that's all you can think. That's really all you can focus on was her beauty. I mean, she's just absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's funny. Even my wife even mentioned, "Yes, we all have a crush on her." You know, it was funny. You know, and I don't. As far as you're talking about her being a character of Clara, I think it is kind of tough to get past that because of her beauty. I mean, it's tough to not focus on something else. But as far as a lot of the stories in last season. I think even Siskoid had mentioned that they're not very memorable to me. Matter of fact, when this 50th episode, I mean the anniversary episode came up and they were talking about Translord, I had to think back and go, where did this come from again? And I kind of remember it being that season finale because I don't remember hardly anything about what happened with the whole translore with Clara. I mean, I think even my wife was even asking me, okay, what happened with Clara? What is she now? You know, so I think there is, for me at least, there's still some confusion as far as who Clara is. I mean, where, what coming out of last season, what is she now?
The Day of the Doctor doesn't quite connect with the name of the Doctor.
Right.
Right? Because it ends on a cliffhanger. They're inside his time stream / mind. And then it ends there, because when we move to the Day of the Doctor, we're not there at all. She's teaching in school. What?
Right.
There's a piece missing there. It's just quite strange. So that's why there's a disconnect.
Very
people
confusing.
Don't quite remember. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely. I did like the back half of the season a lot better than the front half, because the pawns the pawn story should have been over when they walked into the house he gave them that had a blue door. It was such a perfect ending, and then it did not end.
But dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs.
On a spaceship.
Well, that's a kitchen sink episode. So
that one's amazing. I love that one.
It was fun, but there was a whole lot of that in the front half of the season. Those left me well. So I do like Clara, and not because she's cute. Of course, that helps.
Cute is an understatement.
Yeah, very pretty, but. I think the problem with Clara isn't that she's distracting. I guess it's what people call that she's a Mary Sue character, that phenomenon, where she was built for a specific storyline. So her character is a very generic companion in many ways.
Mm.
But what's interesting about her is the arc, is why is she the impossible girl? Why does he meet her and see her die in different incarnations, leading up to the whole time stream thing where she's been accompanying him all his life, helping out, which is what happens in the Name of the Doctor. So that whole mystery is what's interesting about her, but the character itself is a bit of a cipher. I think that may be why people have trouble, getting their hooks into her as a character.
So
possible.
So again, so for refresh my memory. So do we not know who Clara is yet? Still,
we do.
Yeah,
we do.
Okay, because I don't remember. Can you explain that again?
At the end of the Name of the Doctor, she jumps into his time stream, which is connected to all the points in his life, and that's why he meets versions of her. She's just basically discombobulated and thrown into the time stream, and not necessarily as herself, but as other characters, like the headmistress he meets in the snowman, or the girl
echoed throughout
that's
time
inside a Dalek.
Yeah. So really, Ed, until she jumps into the time stream, she's just a girl.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to go back and watch that season.
But when she jumped into the time stream, it kind of closed that loop.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she had been showing up so many times, and then this showed why. It could close that whole time loop. And I don't know, her character doesn't bother me. I don't see her as a Mary Sue, because a Mary Sue, by definition, is written by someone to inject themselves into a story, and I can't see Moffat doing that with her.
Right. It's possible I'm misusing the term. It happens.
Her character, granted, her beauty is evident, but some of the other characters were very attractive too. Amy Pond had one of the most beautiful faces. I thought she was gorgeous. Even Rose Tyler, in her own way, even though she had a very horsey smile, was still very pretty.
Yeah.
And it's also not the first time that a companion has become something more than human. Look at what happened with the Donna Doctor. The difference between this and that is that the character didn't cease to be after that story climaxed. Clara stuck around.
Yeah. It's just funny that it wasn't until her story resolved that I accepted her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was just kind of strange for me. I have to totally agree about Amy Pond. She's actually, she's probably my favorite companion from New Who.
My God, she's got a beautiful face.
I think I'm in the minority. I never liked Amy Pond.
She's got more than just a beautiful face. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm a Martha fan myself.
Yeah. I'm all about Martha.
Yep. Yeah. Martha's the one that left me the coldest.
Martha never did anything.
Now, she's a beautiful woman, but her character always seemed clingy and needy, and the Doctor never really warmed to her the way he did some of his other companions. There was something unique in the aspect of each of the relationship he had with each and every one of them. Rose Tyler, he ended up spending eternity with as another human. Donna became the Doctor. Clara followed the Doctor through time. But Rose was just kind of filler. I mean, not Rose.
Martha
was just kind of filler.
Well, see, Martha was a contrast to Rose. She was the rebound or whatever. But
yeah.
the character itself, she was the one that would say. Rose would also always follow whatever the Doctor said. She was trying to be the Doctor. In the second season, she's extremely irritating, where she's trying to be the Doctor and, you know, doing the same jokes and kind of be very smug. But but Martha is the one that I'm not going to be the Doctor, and I'm not going to do everything you tell me to do. She's the one that sits him down. She's the one that says, in Gridlock she does it, and most memorably in The Last of the Time Lords, or just before, whatever, the Sound of Drums. She says, there's just this great moment where she says, after her apartment blows up, he tells her, no, you can't go to your family or do what I say, and she says, I do what I like. You know, and she's her own woman, and though she's in love with him or taken with him and wants his attention, in the end she's the one that leaves him. She's the one that says, "Yeah, I'm not going to do this." Something Rose would not have been able to do. So to me, Martha was, I like Martha for that.
Yeah, I think I'm almost in agreement with you. I mean. And in my opinion, I honestly think that Martha, of the newest companions since, you know, Christopher Eccleston, I think Martha was probably the strongest companion, or is the strongest companion so far of the newest Doctors. In my opinion, I think she's still my favorite, even though Clara's gorgeous and everything. Mm-hmm. I think Martha is still my favorite new companion.
I think where Martha is supposed to be remembered, like you said, Rose is remembered for Bad Wolf and Amy for, you know, the girl who waited. Everyone's tagline. Siskoid said it, and there's another piece of it too. Martha's supposed to be remembered, A, as the girl who left, the girl who walked away from the Doctor. And in that really terrible season finale, the whole thing with the Master where he turned into a little hobbit or whatever, Martha spent a year walking the Earth, spreading the word of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And while that was just a tiny little piece of the story and it created the I Believe in Fairies that saved everybody, that's supposed to be the other thing she's remembered for, is that she had the best... I hear him talk about a lot how her journey and how she preached the word of the Doctor and all that. And so that's what people are supposed to... I think that's what the creators of the show want us to remember, is that she left and then her journey of that, which they actually did a book... a novel, which is all about her, that year of her life. And it's supposed to be pretty good. I haven't read it.
Dislike her, but she was by far my least favorite.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, she's not... There's nothing wrong with her. You're right, Carrie. She's just... When you rank them, she kind of falls low, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of leads... You're talking about Rose, and you mentioned Bad Wolf. So that actually kind of left a little bit of a question for me. I know, yes, we're supposed to have at least some, I guess, one of the other companions from this episode, but can you explain to me why, or do we know why Bad Wolf was chosen, you know, the Rose / Bad Wolf was chosen as this interface to this, what was it called, the Galaxy Eater or whatever it was? Can you explain that?
They do explain it, or she explains it by saying she took the form from his past memories, or was that the future? Well, so
yeah.
she took his future memories. She took a form from his future memories, but also there's a connection where the Bad Wolf itself, that whatever that entity was, spread itself across all of space and time. When it became Bad Wolf, it spread itself across all time, and left messages for Rose. But then even after Rose left, we still saw some Bad Wolf stuff. And I'm not the only one to have this theory, but even that parallel world where Rose was stuck was to my mind, created by the Bad Wolf for her to take refuge in eventually, etc. Oh, it's
oh wow.
Well, it's a world where, I mean, this is a whole other podcast. So I won't get into it, but still the Bad Wolf, whatever it is sort of space and time itself talking. It's sort of a little bit the TARDIS talking, and the moment, whatever that was, that Time Lord weapon has sort of that personality as well, the Bad Wolf personality, or the Doctor's wife, the Idris personality from the Doctor's wife, where the TARDIS is manifest as a woman. They sort of had to have the same personality. Billy Piper's kind of channeling that character, so that like Time Lord artifacts, including TARDISes, have that AI, if you will, that sort of AI, that sort of personality. So if the moment is like a TARDIS and has connections to the time vortex and can look into the Doctor's future memories, then it might very well have picked up that form because there's a connection to Rose Tyler. Or the Bad Wolf, when it's spread out across the time and space, just gave its form to that, to the moment, just like it spread its name everywhere.
Hmm.
I think you summed it up from a continuity point perfectly. What I'll talk about real quickly is the flip side, which is the making of a movie that's approachable to the general audience. You got to have Billy Piper in it. She's the most recognizable companion.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But if you bring Rose Tyler back, David Tennant's story in this adventure becomes completely derailed. He can't do what he needed to do in that episode if Rose is there. The love of his life that he lost in a parallel world, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work. The story won't work. So having Billy Piper play this invisible character works brilliantly. It's a perfect way to use her in the story and not get bogged down with the Rose storyline. So I think it was perfectly, there's layers. One of my favorite one-liners comes from her bit there where he says, "Bad Wolf girl, I could kiss you." And she says, "Oh, that's going to happen." And, which is great. She's right next to Tennant when she says it too. So I think the usage, like, one of my buddies is really upset because he wanted to see Rose in the story. And I think it was much better done this way, because as much as I would love to see Rose the Doctor, it wouldn't work for the story.
Yeah,
and Rose would have been weird, you know, because Billy Piper's had some work done for Memoirs of a Call Girl or whatever it is. So
yes, she has.
Yeah, so she didn't quite look like she did back in the day. So it would have been strange to see her as Rose.
Well, she looked better than she did in The End of Time. When she did The End of Time in that one little scene in the winter where she's walking and David Tennant sees her, my stepson turned to me and go, "Why did Rose turn ugly?" is what he said to me.
Harsh.
Wow.
But anyway, it was also very approachable to someone who doesn't know anything about the Rose storyline. Let's say they've only watched the Matt Smith era. Mm-hmm. It's just a blonde chick who's talking to John Hurt, and that's fine.
Yeah. So one final thing I wanted to bring up before we wrap this up, because it's...
What? I have 17 hours more material here. You want to talk about the police officer in the beginning, the complete setup? You want to talk about Coal Hill School? Want to talk about I Don't Want to Go? I mean, come on. We got shit to talk about.
Well, okay. Here we go. Question. So explain this to me. The very end, Tom Baker's role.
Yeah.
The creator.
So wait a minute. We're not really doing a podcast. We're just doing therapy for you. Is that what we're doing?
Exactly.
Is this all.
That's the only reason why I wanted to record this, so I could have all my questions answered. You guys are just there as pretty faces, whatever. But so, explain to me the curator. What? How do we know what's going on here with this with Tom Baker role? I mean, it was alluded to him possibly being one of the doctors. Sort of. It seemed to be hinting. Explain. Shag, you explain it.
Me? You know what it is? Anniversary fun.
That's what it is. That's all it was.
Yeah. Is he the doctor? Sure. Yeah, why not? He's the doctor a zillion regenerations from now and has retired, and he's somehow figured a way to regenerate back into an old form and is a curator. Will we ever get there? No. It's just a fun anniversary throwaway, never see it again, really cool nod.
Yeah. But did you happen to notice on when he was walking away, the little round things on the wall? Did you have on the museum?
Oh, yeah.
That blew my mind. That cracked me up.
Yeah. Where were you going to say, Carrie? Oh, well, sorry.
The character said it when the two were talking. He said that perhaps in a future time you will be the curator and you will come back and you'll find a way to wear some of those faces again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a thrill for me to see Tom Baker in it.
Oh yeah, I freaking went crazy.
Yeah, they couldn't use him as the Doctor because he's aged so much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really wanted to see him in it. I was kind of disappointed that Christopher Eccleston couldn't find time.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Thor was that demanding.
Go ahead, Carrie. Sorry.
No, that basically sums it up for me. I felt that they explained it rather well and why he was there, what he was doing, and
And yet they left it ambiguous enough so that we can actually have a debate about it. What was the underground gallery actually the TARDIS? You know, so the TARDIS is the three TARDISes inside the larger TARDIS. That's why they're around.
That never occurred to me. Wow, yeah. Mind blown.
Yeah, let's go crazy. So, yeah, and apparently it's Tom Baker who didn't want to do any, I don't think he was necessarily asked, but he didn't want to do any kind of the fourth Doctor, mm-hmm. now older, that kind of shenanigans, but he was interested in playing a different character who may or may not be the Doctor. So, mm-hmm. And I've seen some stuff online that sort of pointed to the idea that maybe we'll see other former Doctors in other roles. It won't be this, it won't be like this.
The five-ish?
No. Although that was hilarious.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
So are they really under those shrouds in the episode? I want to know, because that means this episode has six Doctors in it.
I don't think so. Were they?
They were clearly on set. They were clearly there that day.
Yeah, because you see Matt Smith do the do the scene.
Uh-huh.
So
that could have been them under the shrouds. I want to know.
That'd be funny. That would be funny.
Yeah, but apparently, I don't know. It seems to me that maybe in the next season, because it's like post anniversary, I don't know. But maybe they'll be there as actors in different roles, mm-hmm. just as winks. Just like we've seen the actress that played Barbara play a different role, et cetera, over the years.
So I it wasn't until the third viewing, so I watched it twice on TV on Saturday, and then I watched it in the theater, that I got Tom Baker's joke. I didn't get the who knows joke. He goes...
The nose.
He goes, who knows?
Yeah.
And I realized, he means Doctor Who's nose. That's hilarious. I didn't get that. Because it was such a dramatic moment, I wasn't looking for a joke. All right, we're going to freaking talk about Christopher Asshole Eccleston.
So what's the deal? What's going on?
I am done with that asshole. He was not.
I'm not disappointed at all that he was in this episode. I was never really a big fan of his.
I have a diatribe ready. Just go. Everyone just wait. No, I'm going. So... He said he has repeatedly said he doesn't want to come back to Doctor Who. He says he doesn't look back at any role. He does a role and he moves on. You never look back. In your career, you have to always move forward. You know what? Bullshit, buddy. You're full of crap. And he's just saying that because he doesn't want to get caught up in the fandom. He hated doing the show. He didn't enjoy it. And you know what? He wants us to he wants to do the show and not look back. Everyone else came back to the 50th except for him. So he doesn't want to look back. So you know what? I'm gonna do you a favor, pal. I'm not gonna look back either. I am never watching another Christopher Eccleston episode again. I'm done with you. As far as I'm concerned, you're like John Hurt's Doctor. You are the forgotten Doctor from now on. Because you don't want to look back at the show? Fine. I won't look back at your era. I'm out. I'm done. I'm pissed off. I've seen enough interviews with him. He is polite. He's never rude. Don't get me wrong. He's never rude about Doctor Who. But he always says, that was so long ago, and I don't look back, and stuff like that. Fine. I'm not going to look back either, man. You're out. Forget it. Everyone else, in 15 years, you're going to be begging to be in the special because you're going to look back at life like everyone else did. Freaking Tom Baker came back, asshole. And he's the one who said he would never come back.
He's going to be in Peter Davidson's seven-ish Doctors.
Yeah, and I hope not. I hope they won't let him. Sorry. Never watching another one. I'm done with it. This action figure can go in the trash.
Oh, you actually have one of his action figures?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have any knees, so it kind of sucks.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He doesn't stand up straight, and he doesn't have any knees. It's like the worst action figure ever.
It's an in-action figure. Sorry about that.
No.
So, Five-ish Doctors. Loved it. Hilarious.
Yeah, I cracked. I was dying. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
It was a nice release because I shotgunned Day of the Doctor and An Adventure in Time and Space back-to-back. I had a lump in my throat.
Yeah. You know, I just read about that just yesterday, The Adventures in Time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've not heard about this before. Oh, is this something brand new? Is it out yet?
It came out a few days before Day of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Thursday or...
Yeah, it's less than a week old.
So how does one watch this? Is this like, was this on BBC, on the BBC, or was it, it was, okay.
Yep.
It was on BBC, it was on Comcast On Demand, either today is the last day or yesterday was the last day, I'm not sure, you can check if it's still out there. I watched it on Comcast On Demand.
So there's no plans to put it, BBC America didn't have, it didn't air it at all?
No, they did, but it was last week.
During the week, BBC America. I was asking about BBC. It was on both BBC and BBC America?
It was definitely on BBC America. I don't know when they aired it the first time. I saw it being rerun at like 1 in the morning one night on, you know, clicking through. I don't know when they ran it the first time. Might have been Friday, might have been Saturday. I don't know when. But it's very good. If you don't know what it is, for those of you out in the audience, it is it's a drama based on true events about how the show of Doctor Who got created. The main characters are William Hartnell, the First Doctor, Verity Lambert, Sidney Newman, the people who created Doctor Who, how they got it to the screen, and it sort of travels through the creation of the show to the end of the William Hartnell era. It's it's really good.
Yeah, when I saw that actor, David Bradley, I think? I'm looking it up now.
Mr. Filch.
Played as William Hartnell. I was shocked. The pictures that I saw on how close he looked. I mean, how well they did
most,
him up.
To most of them. Yeah, most of the like him. Verity Lambert looks amazingly similar to the real person.
Barbara, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, but
yeah, I don't think I've ever seen any William Hartnell. Actually, I know I haven't. I've not seen any William Hartnell episodes.
Really? You should watch them. Good to help you fall asleep.
Yeah, he's my second favorite doctor after McCoy.
Really?
After McCoy, it's Hartnell. I'm sorry.
Really? Canadians are so weird.
For me, it's more about the era. It's more about the era than the doctor himself. The way it was, you know, the setup and the quality of the historical episodes.
Dragonfire? Really? Dragonfire?
Oh, you mean McCoy? McCoy starts getting good from Remembrance of the Daleks, but...
Okay, four episodes then. That's all you got.
No. That's his second season. He had three.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you're right.
Season 25 has some two good stories, and then season 26 is one of the best all-time seasons of Doctor Who ever. So.
Okay, Now, don't get me wrong. I love McCoy. I've met him twice. I've shook the man's hand. I own one of his replica umbrellas. I love McCoy. I recognize... Dragonfire, Happiness Patrol, which can be loved for its own quirks, Silver Nemesis. I mean, there's a lot of bad in there, too.
Of course. As would any doctor, really.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually went back recently to watch the Tom Baker episodes. I honestly couldn't finish. I couldn't finish them all. I think the last episode I stopped at, I probably stopped somewhere in his third season, I think it was, maybe halfway through this third season.
Layla?
No, I went past Layla. Was it Tegan came on board? Was that
Tegan? That's the end.
Well, that's the very end.
Romana?
Who was it? Yes, it was the second Romana. Second Romana is when I stopped watching.
Season 17. That's understandable.
Yeah,
that's reputation has a very, very bad reputation.
It's awful.
Now, did you watch all of them, are you saying, or just selected ones you found?
No, I watched them all.
Okay. Now, I'll tell you, like, the Philip Hinchcliffe stuff is incredible.
The which one?
The Philip Hinchcliffe era, he's the producer. I mean, Talons of Wang Chiang. Now, I may get some Graham Williams in there, but Talons of Wang Chiang, Robots of Death, Horrorfang. Yes. I think Horrorfang Rock was Graham Williams, but it looked like a Hinchcliffe. All those, you know, gothic horror ones were so good. Brains of Morbius, Pyramids of Mars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think exactly what Siskoy was saying earlier. I think it's, even though we love, or at least I love Tom Baker, it is almost the exact same thing what he was talking about from the other other doctors of the Matt Smith and David Tennant. I guess, you know, those early episodes are just fantastic of Tom Baker. I absolutely love them, even on the second viewing. But I guess it kind of wears on you after a while if you watch them enough. You know, and you stick with him for a while, you're ready for that refresh of him. And yeah, towards the end there, I think I just like that's what I'm saying. I couldn't stick with rewatching those episodes again. They were tough to watch.
Understandable. So what other? Come on, anything else on the 50th anniversary?
I love that final shot with all the doctors there. That was just fantastic.
See, I thought the CGI could have been a little better.
I don't know how it could be. I mean, that was pretty awesome. I mean, hello, TV show, even though you say it's a movie, TV show.
It was a movie. Go ahead, Gary.
I was just going to say, it, to me, made Doctor Who a viable movie product, a viable movie source for storylines. If you're going to get that many people to come out to see a long television show in the theaters, for God's sake, go ahead and give it the budget it deserves and make it a proper feature film.
You know, I wonder how much money they made. Because, I mean, it only showed just one night, though, right? The 25th?
It showed one night. However, I just read earlier, and Ed and I were talking about this, it was the number two box office draw behind Catching Fire for that weekend.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yep.
Especially considering most people had, well, at least on the Monday viewing, had already seen it on TV and still went. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I didn't think to look. I didn't think to look to see if any local theaters here had it.
I guarantee Orlando was playing it.
Yeah, I'm wondering just how long. I mean, is it a limited engagement, or is it pretty much for this whole week, or what?
I think it was Monday night. I think that's it.
Only?
Yep. Yeah. It was a one-time showing. That's the way the Fathom events are.
Because I was, unless it was in other countries, when I watched I watched it again Saturday night when they were recording it. They were showing during the commercials when they were doing interviews and stuff, or maybe it was something else I was watching. But they were showing people in a theater even on Saturday.
Yeah, on Saturday night there was a limited number of theaters had it Saturday night, the same night it aired on TV, and then it had a much wider release on Monday. To a number of theaters, and that's it.
Well,
so Saturday night and Monday night, done.
Well, it must have been from what I saw on TV. Then it must have been something from the UK because they couldn't have recorded it that soon and put it you know in between those you know the and the commercials during you know that period of time if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you know what I don't know. Hey, how terrible was that BBC America pre-show with? Whoever that girl was.
Veronica Belmont?
Oh, my God. It was wretched. It was unwatchable.
I enjoyed it. I liked it.
Unwatchable.
It was live. Come on. You think you could do better? You could do better?
She is a TV host. She should have been somewhat engaging. She was
actually
awful.
She's not a TV host. She's mostly done internet. She's more of an internet celebrity.
Does she talk on the internet?
Yes, but okay, she's not TV. She's not a TV host, though.
What I'm saying is she does video production. She should have been better than that. That was awful.
Well.
Even my wife was like, this is really, really bad. Can we turn this off?
Well, yeah, I have to give her, I mean, I'm sure that's probably her first live event. I mean, come on, you got to give her a little bit of benefit of the doubt.
You just have the hots for her.
Well, yeah, I've always had
Just like I'll give Karen Gilliam a pass being bald, because even without the hair, she's still beautiful.
Yeah, what's up with that? I guess she must be filming a movie or something.
It's yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy, a Marvel movie.
Oh, really? Yep.
She's a Nebula or some such thing.
Nebula.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool.
All right. Doctor Who.
Anything Woo! Else? Any final thoughts?
Looking forward to the Christmas special.
So, I hope it's not back to the dreary. There's going to be a lot of emoting again. Because it's this last one. So I'm actually not looking forward to it very much. Mm. I don't want the. I want the fun Matt Smith that we saw in this, that we saw in his first season. I don't want the whole, I don't want to go crap.
Well, you know it's going to be because, you know, hello, was it Trenzalore? Is that what
yep.
they called it?
Yep.
Oh, so you know it's going to be.
Yep.
It's going to be dreary. It's going to be morbid. But it's going to be goodbye.
Because Gallifrey is still out there, there is a seed of hope, a reason for optimism, a reason for looking forward to new episodes rather than dreading the summation of episodes.
So well, is that what we think the next season is going to be, is mostly his adventures of trying to find Gallifrey?
What I've read is that apparently Peter Capaldi, and you know who knows what's true, but I've read Peter Capaldi signed on for 2 years, and there's supposedly an overarching story for 2 years of him searching for Gallifrey.
Only? Or just beginning? What? I mean, just for now?
Just for now. He signed on for 2 years. You know, he could certainly extend that, you know, whatever, but he signed on for at least two. Maybe they want to at least beat Eccleston's record. I don't know.
It would have to be more than just searching for Gallifrey. It would be searching for Gallifrey and trying not to undo the good that you've already done. Trying not to resurrect the Daleks with it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's also just going to be a bunch of little one-off adventures.
Absolutely.
Honestly, those are usually the most fun. The mythology building is like, you know, the jaw-dropping moments, but just the one-off adventures, Blink, you know, or Loving Monsters, or the Doctor's Wife. I mean, those aren't big mythology episodes necessarily, but they were great one-offs. You know, I want more of that.
Speaking of Doctor's Wife, did I hear a rumor that Neil Gaiman is supposed to be writing another episode for next season?
He wrote a shitty one this past season.
I don't remember. What was that?
That terrible Cybermen episode? That was him.
Which one was that? Again, I don't. The season was.
You blocked it out. It's that bad.
It's the one where they're playing chess inside a virtual reality, and Clara brings those damn kids with her.
It's got Willow.
Willow's in it.
Neil Gaiman wrote that piece of crap.
Hmm. Yeah.
Crap.
So he's not going to be writing another episode for the next season.
He might. He just wrote a short story, called. I don't remember what it's called, but it's a really clever name. He just wrote an online ebook, a short novella or whatever.
Of Doctor Who?
Yeah. It's got a real clever name. I don't remember what it's called, but, you know, that's probably good. I mean, the guy knows how to write. It's just the Cybermen episode wasn't any good.
Well, maybe it wasn't all his fault.
That's true. From what I understand, when you write TV, you didn't really write whatever came the final one on the screen. Yeah. It goes in the writer's room and everybody changes it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Any other final thoughts?
Oh, I'll share one quick thing. If you need more 50th anniversary in your life, like I realized this morning as I'm getting ready for work, I'm like, it's over. All the build up this whole past year, the 50th anniversary, I've been so excited. It's over now. It's like I feel like something ended, and I'm like, I don't have as much to look forward to now. So if you need more 50th anniversary like I do, go check out Big Finish. Big Finish does the audio productions. They just released The Light at the End. It's the audio 50th anniversary special. It features the teaming up of the Tom Baker Doctor, Peter Davison Doctor, Colin Baker Doctor, Sylvester McCoy Doctor, and the Paul McGann Doctor. So Doctors 4 through 8. Yes, they actually team up. They are all in the same room at one point talking with each other. They battle the Master. It's also got a nice little human story. It's very well done. I highly recommend it.
Very cool.
The Light at the End.
Anything else?
Oh, yeah, one more thing.
All right, so while you got that that graphic on, Shag, tell us again where we could find most of your stuff.
Firestormfan.com. You can also find me on all the social medias through that. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google Plus, and Tumblr. And in the Fire and Water podcast, by the way.
Yes. Siskoid.
Always siskoid.blogspot.com, Siskoid's blog of geekery, or just Google Siskoid. I'm the only one. I'm the only one. Yeah.
There you go. Like Tigger. Gary?
I am at iPod2iPad.wordpress.com and Twitter at CWPreston.
And for me, pretty much all my links are at about.me/Edward Crosby. Thank you, guys. Hey, Siskoid, thanks for coming on board, man, and coming to discuss this. It was pretty awesome. I appreciate you joining us for this.
Pleasure.
Gary, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Shag.
Yeah.
Shag.
I don't even get a thank you. Nice. Nice.
Thank you, Shag.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Ed.
All right, we're out.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. To leave a comment or suggestion, call us at 813-3210-TUG or email us at thegeeks@theuniquegeek.com. Follow The Geeks on Twitter @TheUniqueGeek. Visit our listserv at listserv.theuniquegeek.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons share alike non-commercial license.